Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. Tonight's author on tour is Scott Sigler, who reads from and discusses his new book, Contagious, published by Crown. In the weeks to come, we have Temple Grandin, Norm Clark, and many more. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute, it's time to begin.
Well, good evening, everyone. On behalf of the Tattered Cover Bookstore, it is my pleasure to welcome you and to thank you for your support. Scott Sigler is one of the world's most successful podcasting authors, with millions of episodes of his books downloaded. He's held the number one position on all podcasting index. We're delighted that we finally have the chance to meet Scott in person tonight as he tours the country to promote his new book, Contagious. It also gives us great pleasure that this event is being recorded, and the podcast will be posted soon on tatteredcover.com. So the future is at hand, and we are delighted that Scott is here to bring us to it. Would you please join me in welcoming Scott Sigler?
Let's take a quick show of hands. How many people have read Contagious already? About half. All right. Cool. And I've got some extra stuff that was cut out that I can put back in, so the people who have to listen to it have already read it. There's some entertainment value for you there. So this first part, these first two parts, are elements that were cut by my editor, who actually is an awesome guy and really gets what I'm doing, but, you know, you don't get into writing if you're not narcissistic to start with. So it's not like, I'm horrible, I'm going to write a book for everybody to read. No, you're like, so these things getting cut was a little upsetting to me, but, you know, they're not that good. So we'll see how it goes. He could still hear them. He wished he couldn't, but he could. Had the sounds come through his ears, he could have used earplugs. Had the messages been pictures, somehow flashing in front of him, he could have closed his eyes. But he couldn't turn them off, because he sensed them in his head. And he couldn't turn that off, not without a bullet. Soft, distant, broken syllables like map and food and tad and cops. Half images, whispers of thoughts and breaths of emotion from people he did not know. Emotions like fear, suspicion, anxiety. Those feelings battled against his own emotions, like rage, hatred, and the overwhelming desire to destroy. And one odd emotion he never expected to feel, compassion. The rage and hatred and desire to destroy should have been in conflict with the feeling of compassion, but they all seemed to swirl together into a cohesive sensation that felt good deep in his chest. There was no conflict, because all of those emotions pointed towards the same solution. He would help those people. First, he had to find them. He was close, so very close, but someone didn't want him to help those people. And once he dealt with that, Perry Dossie could do what needed to be done. He's got to be around here, Claude Baumgartner said. Just keep driving, Jens Milner said. There's only like 10 fucking streets in this excuse for a town. Where the hell could he have gone? Go right at the corner. Claude turned right on North Lincoln. Both men peered through the windshield into the starless night. Wipers whipped across the glass, sweeping away a combination of heavy rain and bits of ice. A stiff wind drove the rain and ice against the white subcompact, filling the interior with a sound like bacon frying. It's not like we can lose that car, Jen said. I like how that freak gets a fucking Mustang GT and we're in a goddamn Avis shitbox.
It's called being discreet, Claude said. At least you don't have to wear a suit.
Yeah, I kind of dig the flannel and jeans. Sure beats a tie.
I can't see a fucking thing in this shit, Claude said. Who lives in this weather?
Yeah, like your Gulf Coast hurricanes are so much better, Jen said. I'll take a harsh winter over that any day.
Claude unconsciously leaned forward, as if that extra 2 inches might help him see down the street.
You looking in the lawns? He asked.
I'm looking everywhere. I got the right, you got the left?
I got it, Claude said.
He alternated looks down the wet, icy road and at the widely spaced small houses on his left.
Small town residential. Nothing moved. Nothing except for the rain. He checked out a greenhouse on his left, looking for any motion, or maybe the shape of someone hiding in the bushes or behind a tree. Someone big. The sudden, gurgling roar of a muscle car engine snapped his attention back to the road. He saw a flash of red and white pass under a streetlight. He lost half a second while his brain figured out that just because the car's headlights weren't on didn't mean it wasn't moving. It was only a half second, but it was enough. And by the time he started to react, it was already too late. His arm stiffened right before the impact threw him forward. He didn't get far. The airbag smacked into his face, stunning him like a heavyweight's knockout punch. He flew back into his seat, senses scattered. Half thoughts misfired. Move quick before it's too late. Get your gun. Get it. He tasted blood. Dripping from his nose? Yeah. Claude shook his head to clear his thoughts, then reached for his gun. He meant to grab it fast, a regular quick draw from the shoulder holster, but his hand seemed to move in slow motion. Too slow. The driver's side door opened. Claude had a brief chance to look to his left at the giant man silhouetted against a streetlight. Then crushing hands closed on his neck and yanked him into the stinging, icy rain. They were going to get him. Tad wasn't going to let that happen, even if he had to kill himself. The window slid open. Curtains blew back, thrown by the same nighttime wind that splashed cold rain and bits of ice into the face of Thaddeus Tad McMillan Jr. He hoped his little brother wouldn't wake up. When Sam woke up, he cried loud. Real, real loud. His cries always brought Mom and Dad. Mom and Dad, who wanted to get Tad. Tad got down off his toy box. He picked up the box and lugged it over to his brother's crib. Carrying it hurt the blisters on his hands, but he had to stand in the toy box to reach inside the crib, just like he needed it to reach the sliding window's latch. Tad set the box down next to the crib, stood on top, and reached in to pull the blankets up tight under the baby's chin. That would keep Sam warm. Tad gently brushed his brother's hair, then leaned in and kissed the baby on the forehead. Goodbye, Tad whispered. He got down and lugged the box to the window one last time. Good luck, Sam, Tad said quietly, looking back at his brother. I really hope you don't wind up like Sarah. Tad held onto the window frame as he put his feet up on the metal sash. Freezing rain instantly soaked his shirt. Bits of wet ice stung his face. A gust of wind almost blew him back, but he adjusted his balance and held on. It was better this way. Anything was better than staying here. Tad McMillan jumped into the night. Tad shivering brought him out of it. He rolled on the grass, wondering if he was already dead. His shoulder hurt really bad. He didn't feel dead. He was still moving. When people jumped out of windows on TV, they hit the ground and they didn't move. He rolled to his butt. Cold water seeped into the seat of his jeans. Tad slowly stood. His legs hurt real bad, too. He took a deep breath, the rain and bits of ice splashing inside his wide-open mouth. He looked up at the second-story window open to the night sky. That was weird. It seemed like such a big drop from up in his room, but from here it was about as high as a basketball hoop. It didn't matter how high it was or it wasn't. He was out. Out of the house. Okay, so he wasn't dead, but he wasn't going back in there either. Tad ran. His legs hurt, but they worked, and that was enough. He sprinted out to the side of the road and turned left. He pounded down a sidewalk cracked by tree roots and slick with slush. He sprinted hard. He looked up just before running headlong into a man. A huge man. Tad stopped, frozen on the spot. The man was so big that Tad momentarily forgot about the house, his mom, his dad, his sister, even little Sam. The man stood there, lit by a street lamp that formed a cone of mist and light and wind-whipped streaking rain. He looked down out of glowering blue eyes. He wore jeans and a wet, short-sleeved gray T-shirt that clung to his enormous muscles like a superhero costume. Long blonde hair matted his head and face like a mask. A big, baseball-sized, twisted scar marred the skin of his left forearm. The giant man spoke. Are you? His voice trailed off. His eyes narrowed for a moment. Then they opened, just like he'd remembered something very cool. Are you Tad? Tad nodded. Tad, the man said, do you feel itchy? Tad shook his head. The man turned his right ear toward Tad, tilted his head down a bit, as he might have done if Tad was whispering and he was trying to hear.
"This is important," the man said. "Are you sure? Are you really, really sure you're not itchy? Not even a little?"
Tad thought about this carefully, then nodded again. The man knelt on one knee. Even kneeling, he still had to bend his head to look Tad in the eye. The man slowly reached out with a giant's hand, placing his palm gently on Tad's head. Thick fingers curled down around Tad's left temple, while a thumb as big as Tad's whole fist locked down on his right cheek. Tad kept very, very still. The man turned Tad's head back into the right.
"Tad, what happened to your eye?"
Tad said nothing.
"Don't piss me off," the man said. "What happened to your eye?"
"Daddy hit me."
The man's eyes narrowed again.
"Your daddy hit you?"
Tad nodded, or tried to, but he couldn't move his head. The man stood. Tad barely came up to his belt. The man let go of Tad's head and pointed back the way Tad had come.
"Is that your house?"
Tad didn't need to look. He just nodded.
"How did you leave?"
"I jumped out the window," Tad said.
"Run along, Tad," the man said.
He reached behind his back and pulled out a long piece of black metal bent at one end. Tad recognized it when he and his family were on that trip to Cedar Point last summer, when Dad had to fix a flat. It was a tire iron. The man walked down the road, heading for Tad's house. Tad watched him for a few seconds, then remembered what he was running away from, and he sprinted down the sidewalk. He made it one block before he stopped again. Who knew that running away would have so many distractions? First, that big superhero man, and now a car accident. A fancy red and white Mustang and a little white hatchback smashed head-on. The Mustang's trunk was open. The little white car's driver's side door was also open. The inside light of the hatchback lit up a man lying motionless, his feet still next to the gas pedal, his back on the wet pavement. The man had blood all over his face, and he was holding a gun. There was another man in the passenger seat, not moving, leaned forward, face resting on a deflated airbag. Over the pouring rain and the strong wind, Tad heard a small voice.
"Report," the voice said. "God damn it, Claude, report."
Tad knew he should just keep running. But what if his parents came after him? Maybe he needed that gun. Tad walked up to the man lying on the pavement. Rain steadily washed the blood off the man's face and onto the wet black concrete.
"Bomb, where are you?"
The voice was coming from a little white piece of plastic lying next to the man's head. It was one of those ear receivers, just like they used on Frankie Anvil, his favorite TV show. Maybe this man was a cop, like Frankie. Cops would take him away, could protect him from Mom and Dad. Tad looked at the earpiece for a second, then picked it up.
"Hello? Bomb, is that you?"
"No," Tad said. "My name is Tad."
A pause.
"Tad, my name is Dew Phillips. Do you know where Mr. Baumgartner is?"
No, Tad said.
"Wait, does Mr. Baumgartner have a big black mustache?" "Yes, that's him. Is he there?"
"Oh," Tad said.
"Well, he's lying on the ground here bleeding and stuff."
"Shit,"
Mr. Phillips said.
"Tad, how old are you?"
"I'm 7. Are you the police?"
Another pause.
"Yeah, sure. I'm the police."
Tad let out a long sigh. A policeman. He was almost safe.
"Tad, is there another man around? A man named Mr. Milner?"
"I don't know," Tad said. "Is Mr. Milner, like, really, really big?"
"No," Mr. Phillips said. "That's someone else."
"Oh," Tad said. "Well, Mr. Milner might be the short guy in the passenger seat, but he looks dead. Can you send someone to get me? I'm not going back home."
Mr. Phillips spoke again. This time his voice was calm and slow.
"We'll send someone to get you right away. Tad, listen carefully. That really big man you talked about, is he there with you now?"
"No, he's gone," Tad said. "I think he's going to my house."
"Your house?"
"Yes, sir. I live right down the street."
"Okay. Hold on to that earpiece. We'll use it to find you. Give me your address, and then whatever direction you saw that big man walking, you run the opposite way, and you run fast."
Dew Phillips ran a red light at the intersection of Grant and Broadway. He'd even put the porta bubble up on top of his Lincoln, its circling light playing off the sheets of pouring rain. Fuck secrecy. He had 2 men down. That murdering kid was going after the hosts again. Dew wondered if any of the infected would be alive by the time Margaret arrived. Thaddeus McMillan Sr. sat at his kitchen table, bouncing his 5-year-old son Stephen on his knee. Stephen wore his favorite fuzzy yellow pajama bottoms and a little Milwaukee Bucks t-shirt. Looks so damn cute. Stephen was the good child. Tad Jr., not a good child. Sarah, not a good child. Thaddeus pushed the thoughts away. He didn't want to think about his daughter. A dozen empty beer bottles stood on the table, leaving wet ring stains on the map spread across the table's surface. There were more beer bottles on the floor, along with a half-empty fifth of gin. He didn't drink gin. His wife, Jenny, guzzled the stuff. A fucking alcoholic bitch. She'd been a 3-martini-a-day girl up until Junior started acting up. Since then, she'd skipped the martini glasses altogether and started pouring gin right into her favorite Hello Kitty coffee cup. Every time she took a sip, that stupid cartoon cat seemed to stare at him. Limping along on one crutch, Jenny hobbled into the kitchen. She couldn't put weight on that foot, which was understandable if you saw the thing, and Thad had no desire to ever see it again. Jenny's insistence on keeping Jenny Kitty in hand at all times complicated the crutch walk even more. She stopped just past the open doorway between the kitchen and the stairway that led up to the kids' rooms. She stared at him. So did that fucking cat. "What are we going to do about that boy of yours?" she asked. Thaddeus shrugged. "I don't know." "He's a bad influence on Stephen and Sammy," she said. "I don't know why you let him run wild." "Look, I grounded him," Thaddeus said. "What else can we do?" "You can discipline him," she said. Thaddeus looked away, ashamed. He had disciplined the boy. Maybe a little too much. He'd hit his own son, right in the face. Not slapped, but punched. How could he do that to his own flesh and blood? And yet the boy was acting so crazy. Something had to be done. "Thaddeus," Jenny said, "we have to go. You know we do. They're almost done, and we haven't even left yet. We can't take Junior, and we can't leave him behind either." He nodded slowly. Maybe Jenny was right. For 14 years, ever since their first date, he'd been able to count on her for sound advice. Maybe she could see the obvious when he couldn't. He didn't know. Maybe she just cared enough for him to give him tough love. He hung his head, stared absently at the back of little Stephen's head. Junior had always been his favorite. You weren't supposed to have a favorite child, he knew. Yet he couldn't change the fact that Junior lit up his heart just a little bit more than the others. Maybe that was why he'd been so lenient. "All right, Jenny," Thaddeus said. "Get him in here." Jenny leaned back so she could shout up the steps to the second floor. "Junior, come into the kitchen. Your father and I want to talk to you." She leaned forward again, resting heavily on her crutch. They heard Tad's bedroom door open. It always squeaked. Thaddeus kept meaning to oil the hinges, but just hadn't gotten around to it. "You've got to have a firm hand," Jenny said. "You must not waver. You must be strong, just like you were with Sarah." Sarah. He didn't want to think about Sarah. Tad stomped down the stairs, stomped fast. But how could a little boy sound so heavy? Thaddeus watched Jenny lean back into the hall again. An arm, a huge arm, lashing down, a hissing sound like a golf club swinging just before it hits the ball. And then a dull, wet thunk, like the sound of a watermelon dropped on the floor. Jenny's head snapped down, then limply bounced back up, but only halfway. The very top of her head wobbled like shaking jello. She managed one staggering step, then dropped to the floor. Her Jenny Kitty cup landed with a ceramic clank, spilling 4 shots worth of liquor onto the kitchen's linoleum. Thaddeus's grip on little Stephen tightened as he stood. He started to come around the table, heading to the kitchen counter to grab a knife, a frying pan, something, when the monstrous man turned the corner. Thaddeus McMillan Sr. froze in his tracks. "Holy fuck," he said. The huge, wet, blonde nightmare stood in the kitchen doorway. Thaddeus had seen a man that big once. Almost that big. He'd met Detroit Lions defensive tackle Dusty Smith in a bar. Dusty was 6'4", 270 pounds. More like a refrigerator with legs than a human being. And this guy was bigger than Dusty Smith. And Dusty Smith hadn't been holding a tire iron. In one hand, the man held the tire iron that had just killed Jenny. In the other massive hand, he held Thaddeus's baby, Sam. He wasn't cradling Sam. He was holding the tiny baby the way you might pick up a toy doll that's been left on the floor. Thumb and forefinger circled Sammy's little neck. The three remaining fingers wrapped around Sammy's yellow, pajama-clad body. Sammy's eyes were closed.
Oh no, it's him!
The voice is in Thad's head. They had been quiet most of the evening.
It's the son of a bitch!
I'm here to help you, the son of a bitch said.
Little Stephen raised an arm and pointed at the man. He spoke in his baby boy voice.
Daddy, he said. Kill this motherfucker!
Stephen suddenly squirmed and kicked. Thad dropped him. The little boy fell clumsily but scrambled to his feet. Stephen's little Milwaukee Bucks t-shirt slid up when he stood, exposing a light blue triangle on the skin at the small of his back. The boy screamed a murderous, gravelly battle cry that sounded almost comical from such a tiny voice, then charged the giant man. The son of a bitch took a step forward and kicked, swinging his hips into the blow. Stephen made a little staccato sound when the foot connected, a half cough, half squeal. His small body shot across the room like it had been fired from a cannon. With a sickening snap, Stephen's right side slammed into the edge of the kitchen table. The impact tilted the table back, spilling beer bottles onto the linoleum floor before it rocked back to level. Stephen's body, still bent at an odd angle to the right, hit the floor. The boy's little fingers twitched a bit, but other than that, he didn't move. Thaddeus reached the counter, yanked open a drawer, and pulled out a butcher knife.
Yes, kill him!
He turned to face the man murdering his family, but as he did, he saw a flash of spinning black, and then his head filled with a sudden darkness and pain. He fell to the floor, blinking, thoughts slipping in and out. He tried to spit. A chunk of tooth barely escaped his lips and hung on his right cheek, plastered there by blood and saliva.
Get up! Get up!
A hand around his neck, lifting him. His feet dangling.
Kill him! Kill him!
His breath non-existent. Thaddeus opened his eyes. The man monster's face was only an inch away. 2 days' growth of reddish beard. A snarl. Thaddeus stared into blue eyes wide with madness.
You shouldn't hit your kids, the man said.
Thaddeus heard an approaching siren, but it was too late. The hand around his neck might as well have been an iron vise. It squeezed, slow and steady.
It's okay, the man said. He smiled. I'm here to help you.
Breathe, said the voice in his head, the same voice that had made him kill his only daughter. Fight! You have to breathe!
Thaddeus felt his bladder let go, felt the heat of piss filling his underwear and jeans, then felt his sphincter offer up the same betrayal. Even in the act of dying, he somehow had a flash of embarrassment. He would have liked to have said one last thing. He would like to have told the voices in his head to stick it where the sun don't shine, but he couldn't make any noise at all, save for a tiny, hissing gurgle. And that's happy story time at Camp Scott.
Tomorrow's story is about a puppy.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fote, and we have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Stay pod tuned in the coming weeks for Temple Grandin, Norm Clark, and many more as we podcast Authors on Tour. This podcast was originally recorded on January 13th, 2009.